This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batzler, visiting with Andrew Collier, my colleague, who wrote in 2022, China's Technology War, Why Beijing Took Down Its Tech Giants. Ideology is the simple answer. However, it is 3 years later, and we get to measure how this campaign of 21-22 has worked out for the Chinese people and for the world economy. Andrew, the People's Bank of China, the PBOC, dominates the scene then and now, has a lot of brick-and-mortar representation across the country. But if I read correctly, e-commerce, called then, quaint term now, we just call it online, e-commerce was a direct threat. Why and how and what did it do about it?
Well, there's a couple of things going on. The People's Bank of China, it regulates the banks. There were other people fighting this fight in Beijing, including the antitrust and anti-monopoly people and the other bank regulators. But PBOC was definitely on the lead. And their concern, they claim, was instability. China is very nervous about any sign of any cracks that could cause the collapse of the Communist Party, similar to what happened in Russia. So if you suddenly had a financial collapse or you had like a big company that went under, that could be dangerous for social stability. So the PBOC argued that, gee, Jack Ma and these online and Financial and these other online companies are basically unregulated banks, that we really need to crack down on that. So they quickly ran forward and instituted regulations that prevented their growth. I would say behind the scenes, the concern, as I mentioned earlier in the interview, is that having all this money in private hands with billionaire entrepreneurs like Jack Ma was perceived as a threat to the Communist Party because they're very popular and they could command a lot of respect and they could look like they're actually more competent than the people running the government. So at the end, plus they commanded a lot of capital that the government felt that they wanted for their own ends. So there's another story behind the story on this.
So we're looking at the ability of the PBOC to shut down its rival, which would have been e-commerce in general, not just Ant, all aspects of capital investment. Did it also feel threatened by foreign investment as well? You know, the story today is foreign investment is missing and Xi Jinping is begging for it to return. Is that PBOC's idea?
The PBOC is less concerned with foreign investment because foreign investment basically has been a very small part of total money in China. So they've always kept a lock hold on it. It's very hard to start a bank in China that it's owned by a foreigner. They like big investments like Texas, the semiconductor industry, the auto industry, things where they can kind of keep an eye on it and their hard goods. But they don't like a lot of stuff in the financial system being owned by foreigners. So they've kept a lid on that. That has not been a real risk.
All right. Now, there is what Andrew characterizes in his book in 22 as a leftist lurch, which is a brilliant metaphor that works always. I believe Xi Jinping's father was purged because he was said to be on the capitalist road. That's an old-fashioned way of saying you're a rightist lurch. So Xi Jinping is a leftist lurch here, and there's a lot of Oedipal in this, but we don't have time for Xi Jinping's father's torments. We're going to go to what Xi wanted to achieve in 22. He wanted to mitigate the property prices that were creating a bubble. He wanted to repress the consumer, and he certainly wanted to redistribute income. That is, he emphasized that we're lifting people out of poverty. 3 years later, Andrew, let's take them one at a time. What about the property bubble? Did he mitigate it in some fashion that he hoped? Because right now, I describe the property market week to week as a crater. Did he want that?
No, I mean, he kind of got stuck with this situation. The property and bubble had been created, it'd be going on for some 25 years. And when he stepped into office in 2012, it was definitely it's on its way up. And it was fueling growth. I mean, one of the reasons why China's economy grew so much is because they were building lots of apartment houses and commercial real estate and roads and bridges. And she kind of went along with this whole thing. The problem was that it got dawned on the leadership, particularly with the stock market crash in 2015, that the property bubble could eventually pop. And the party, the Communist Party, would be left looking unable to control the economy and the financial system, which would make them look inept and question their entire ability to govern China. So Xi Jinping in 2020 did what most authoritarian leaders don't do, which is to withdraw the punch bowl just as the party's starting to use the phrase that we use in the United States. And he told the property developers, you cannot borrow more money if you have lots of debt. So he kind of cratered the property industry, caused the bubble to pop. And now he's in the position of trying to find a new way to get the growth going that might replace property. And in his mind, that is tech. But in the book I'm doing at Harvard right now, I argue that the tech sector cannot replace property and that China is going to be in deep economic trouble in the future.
Did she want Evergrande to collapse?
I think you could argue that just the way she took down Jack Ma and the other tech entrepreneurs, he began to see the very wealthy billionaire property developers as a potential threat. Right. So in the back of his mind, he may have been happy that Evergrande, the country's largest developer, went belly up. But it did also cause economic problems that he's now got to deal with, although he's trying to make other people responsible so he doesn't have egg on his face.
There are anecdotes of people camping in the apartments that they paid for, unfinished, open windows, and lighting fires with wood at night to cook. And these are especially in the tertiary cities. Do you believe those anecdotes? It sounds like, post-apocalyptic stuff.
Oh, it's absolutely true. I mean, I spent years tramping through a lot of these unfinished buildings. And unfortunately, the regulators let the developers use as their main source of income deposits by hopeful buyers. The market had been going up for several decades, and everybody figured it would just continue to go up. So they were okay, fine, we'll give you 40%, 50% down, 80% down to buy an apartment. And when the bubble popped, all of a sudden, there wasn't enough money for these developers to finish these apartments. And so a lot of people got stuck with these empty shells.
Repression of the consumer. What did he want to achieve in 22? The present consumer is hiding his or her gold if they have it and not buying anything new.
Well, China has one of the largest savings rates in the world. I mean, a huge amount of money is put aside because people, first of all, the stock market is very small. It's not a great place to invest. And second of all, they're concerned about the future. And the second point is that where consumption is 70% of the economy in the United States, it's only 30% in China. So consumption is really not the way that there is growth. So the state is very happy to take these savings deposits and then allocate them and pay low interest rates, which is where the repression comes on. And then allocate that money to what they think will help China grow, which is semiconductors and AI and other and robotics and so forth to make the nation great internationally. The problem is that it means you don't have a consumption market. So just the way United States started with government investment in chips back in the 1960s with the Minuteman missile, within 10 years, the dominant investment for the PC revolution was private investment. China doesn't have that kind of capacity because consumption is low. So that's where Xi Jinping has been forcing the savings into his own channels.
And the question about the consumer right now, there are stimulus programs out there, and there, I'm told, are consumption police who come around and say, don't you need a new tea kettle? Is that true? Or is that an anecdote that wit? Is that wit?
No, they've been programmed something like $45 billion for trade-in of old cars. I think they had some tax breaks to buy consumer appliances. This is, you know, helps. It's sort of on the margins. It's okay. But, you know, it's a very large economy and you can't do it by tweaking at the edges. I mean, I think basically Beijing's attitude, the government is, you know, with just a little help, we'll get the consumer back on their feet. But the consumer is sitting there thinking, okay, the economy's tanking. GDP growth is less than the official data says. My biggest asset is my house, and which is now worth 30 or 40% less than it was a couple of years ago. The rest of the world doesn't want our exports, and they're starting to fight back on us. So we're not going to spend. We've got to save our money. So we can't really plunge ahead. So I think Beijing is dreaming that they can revive consumption.
The third component of leftist lurch is to bring people up out of poverty. How are they doing right now when we come back? China's technology war, why Beijing took down its tech giants. Andrew Collier is the author.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.